B-Pod Studios.
Welcome in, everybody. Farzetta and Trey in the morning. Bob Cooney, Jamie Lynch, Sam Wilson, Andrew Salchunas on the updates. Happy MLK Day to everyone. I hope people have the day off, but if you don't, we're here to keep you company. On the way to work today, Trey, happy Martin Luther King Day.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
Yeah.
Are you mad at me that we're working today?
Hey, man, you know, hey.
Yeah. Let me answer that for you. Yes. Translation. Day, you
know?
Yes.
We like, Trey, what do you think? He's like, man, there's nothing to do at 6 a.m. Yeah. I'm like, all right, I guess we're coming in. Party. Let's party.
Yeah, see, this is your fault too, Thomas. Because when you are asked these questions, instead of saying, yeah, I want off, you do say that all the time. Yeah, what else am I going to do?
I know, but I'm going to be the guy. That says, no, I don't want to come in.
Yes, yeah, right. Be a leader.
You know, everybody's like, hey, do you want to come in to work? No. But all right.
Yeah. What's wrong?
All right, I won't blame you then.
You know what? I woke up this morning, and I felt like I aged 20 years just yesterday.
Yeah, I was
watching
trying.
Those games. It was insane. I even put this out on the old social media. Good luck Super Bowl Sunday. As great as Super Bowl Sunday is, no matter what, good luck topping this championship Sunday.
First
that we all
time
missed.
NFL history, two games go to overtime in that situation.
Bonkers. Absolutely bonkers. The other thing was that as great of a day as it was, to end on a walk-off touchdown, like that's a thing now. Right, and it's been a thing for a long time. And I mean, you could score a touchdown on the opening drive of every overtime in NFL history, and you could win the game. You know, first score wins, sudden death, which was stupid. Now it's still stupid that you could still win without the other team having a possession. Now the Saints had a possession; they coughed it up. Drew Brees threw the interception. Actually, should have been his second interception late in that game. How the Rams didn't pick off that floater he had for 43 yards to Ted Ginn is miraculous at the 2 minute warning of that game. But just yesterday's games were just absolutely nuts from start to finish. And I have never been more happy to dance on the grave of a season of a team not in the NFC East than I was yesterday to dance on the grave of the New Orleans Saints. And Jamie, I know you were right there with me. I thought I was having fun, and then I saw your timeline, and I was like, oh my God.
I was
savage.
I was being ruthless, and I loved it. Mark Ingram's tears, I was like, feed them to me. Let me drink from the bath of Ingram tears.
When I saw not only that tweet, but other people's tweets about how upset they were and saw videos of their locker room and everything, I couldn't help but think of Cartman, eating the tear, drinking the tears of
Scott,
that.
Erickson's dead parents? Yes. Or drinking Scott's tears of his dead parents after he killed his parents.
Yeah, exactly.
Normal stuff.
Yeah, I forgot that was the context of it. Yeah. Perhaps I should not have tweeted that.
Well, he killed his parents and then fed him his parents in chili. So, yeah, that was pretty dark.
Oh, Viscoozy. It's a cartoon. Whatever. So, anyway, I couldn't help but respond to your tweets with that, with the Cartman licking the tears off the kid's face.
Great.
And then I saw Shefty tweet out the you'll feel bad for the Saints type of tweet. Yeah. And I'm like, I just put that gif on there as well of Cartman doing the same thing. It was popular. It did well on that timeline. But just an insane game. But we're going to talk about the rules in the NFL in overtime, because it's just, no one's ever happy.
Hold on.
They've been stupid for a long time.
Yeah. I never heard Jimmy Buffett sing the national anthem.
I missed that.
Horrible.
Yeah, it was bad.
Like, I'm listening to it, and I said out loud, this guy is a professional singer.
He could have picked anyone. I mean, just, hey, you, up there, seat, come on down.
In New Orleans, now, not every city you could say that, but in New Orleans.
Jimmy Buffett, man.
In New Orleans, you could walk down the street and just find anyone to do a better job.
Go into any bar with somebody that's behind a microphone, they were better than that.
Yes. And he dropped the mic at the end. Like, I just killed this.
Well, it's good that he's confident.
Dude, it was awful.
I saw
when you're worth like $1 billion, yeah, it's easy to be confident.
Sure.
When you're bad.
But to drop the mic after the national anthem?
Yeah.
And then who did the second game? It wasn't as good.
Melissa something.
Melissa Etheridge. Yeah.
Yeah, but she smashed Jimmy Buffett's.
You and I could have smashed Jimmy Buffett.
I mean, it wasn't Fergie bad, but it was bad.
Gotcha. All right. It's amazing what an apostrophe S did at the end of that sentence. But anyway, I missed both the national anthems. I was just getting back in and sat down and just caught the opening kickoff for the Saints. And
you're making your nachos?
No, I was actually having a crab omelet. Thank you very much. And it was delicious. Mm-hmm. I got back home and watched the games and all that fun stuff. But the other part of it, aside from the OT rules, is just whether or not replay needs... Do you want more replay in the NFL?
You need... it depends on the situation. When we're talking about some of these rules and stuff, I could see adding some of that, especially when it comes to like pass interference and all that.
Yeah. If you have it, I feel like you should use it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to go.
It's there.
I don't want to go about and say that there should be everything should be reviewed. But when it's as blatant as a pass interference,
so you're saying Sean Payton should have the ability to challenge a non-call.
Yeah.
Because I believe that is a slippery slope.
Yeah, because then now what? You know.
Oh, but it's all a slippery slope. It's a slippery slope once you said, yeah, replay, yeah, bring it back.
Is all the replay lending to what we saw in the first game? Like the second game, you had a lot of replays, and they all worked out perfectly. You know, you had the catch that wasn't a catch. You had, you know, you had different things that happened in that
Edelman
second game.
Edelman not touching the ball.
Edelman not touching the ball, which was a huge, huge. All right, for those, yeah, the replay worked. I just think the officials are getting worse and worse and worse because of the fact replay's there. Mm-hmm. You know, that's your backup. Oh, if I miss it, that's your backup. The play that wasn't called, I almost didn't mind it because it didn't put the referee into the game. It was like, okay, whatever. Now, I don't know. I am so torn on this. I think if you take away some of the reviews and all that stuff, that it humanizes the game a little bit more and it makes players know exactly what they can do a little bit better.
Right, look, again, I was dancing on the Saints' grave yesterday, but I always think about what happens if it happens to us in Philadelphia.
That's how you have to look at it.
So,
can you imagine?
So let the good people of Philadelphia hear me now. Hear ye, hear ye. If that happens here, we're not here today because it's burned to the ground. It's all gone. Everything's gone.
Airwaves are on fire.
Exactly.
Today.
There's not even me speaking into this microphone. There's no Philadelphia. It does not. We have imploded as a city if that happens. If that happened here, we're screaming that everything should be reviewed. Everything should be up for review and everything like that. Penalties and everything like that. But that play was egregious. I think we can all admit. It was
bad.
Atrocious call, and I'm thrilled that it went against the Saints because I hate that team now.
They deserve the worst in life.
They absolutely do. So, of course, we're going to go through everything that was Championship Sunday and how incredible it was. We're going to talk about, I think, a maturity level that I'm trying to reach as a fan listening to Tony Romo, and I'm getting there. There's still two things that I'm just not ready with. Two things. One personal, one professional. If I could just sit Tony Romo down and have a conversation with the man. First off, he'd probably predict what I'm going to tell him anyway.
Yes.
And then break it down before I even tell him. How he played into the Bryce Harper saga yesterday a little bit. We'll get into that. We will get into the 76ers and what happened in that loss.
What a great game.
On Saturday.
Unfortunately, the wrong
game. They fought and then just stupid in the final 15 seconds of that game. Just unbelievable. We got some Temple tickets we want to give away. We got some auto show tickets we're going to give away. And we have some more information about Super Bowl weekend, including the party itself. We have the teams. And pretty much throughout the day, I'll be announcing the rest of the teams into the field of 64. Now, we're going to have some play-in games there, so we're going to get into that in a little bit. But right now, we're going to focus on the party for this because you can download your tickets at 975thefanatic.com. 975thefanatic.com. People that just show up to participate in the party can walk away with some incredible prizes. They got some free food at the event as well. Philly Pretzel Factory, Hers Chips will be there. Beck's Cajun Cafe, Tony Roney's, that's always nice to throw in there. Deetson Watson, Piccalilli Inn, and beer sales, by the way, Trey, start at 7 a.m.
Oh, that's awesome.
You want to have a beer at 7 a.m.?
Yeah.
I didn't say you would.
I'll answer for anybody
else.
Thank
you very much, Bob. Thank you. We got some more sexy weather reports that we got to talk about.
All right.
We have all that and more coming up on today's show. At 610-632-0975, our Twitter poll brought to you by Window Nation. Sam Wilson, what do you have?
Today we asked, would you be in favor for more replay in the NFL? We have just over 100 votes so far. 59% say yes.
Wow, it's going to be a close one today, mm-hmm. It seems like. All right, coming up in a few, we'll hear the tears of Sean Payton, something that I believe everyone in Philadelphia would love to hear. Time at the Fanatic is 611.
the story here. Exclusive from Philly Voice. Sources inside the Eagles paint Carson Wentz as selfish, uncompromising, and playing favorites. That's a quotation from the story. And we have him. All right, on the line with us right now from PhillyVoice.com, Joe Santoliquido. Joe, good morning, man.
Hey, good morning, guys.
All right. I'm going to ask you the question that I think is on some people's minds with this story. What the hell? Kind of catching some people off guard here. So if you had to sum up the story, what do you got?
Well, I don't think it's catching anybody, really. I think a lot of these tidbits were there. If you read...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The whole thing, you'll see, this came out, Justine Anderson touched on this during the course of the season, touched on it. And I'll say, and Mark, you know me very well.
Yeah.
Bob knows me very well. I am the stumbler bumbler. I am the guy that stumbles into some things. And this started as an innocuous question with, I can't be specific as to who and can't be specific as to where, but it started as an innocuous question involving Eagles offensive coordinator Mike Rowe. Mm-hmm. And I was immediately corrected and said, you know, Joe, it's not Rowe. It's Wentz.
Well, a player said this to you?
Sources said this to me.
Within the Eagles?
Sources within the Eagles said this to me. Sources, and I mean sources with an S plural.
Wow, okay.
And they just went on and touched on it. And then just like I said, just touched on it. And then gradually what would happen is I'm thinking to myself, you know, your antennas go up and then you get a little bit here and you get a little bit there. And Mr. Cooney's been around more than a few of these radios. Uh-huh. You know, you get a little bit here and you get a little bit there and then it starts to build and then it starts to build. And then, and you know, especially you, know how anal I am when it comes to something like this and when it comes to large stories. I will go back over it again. I will go back to the sources again. Are you sure about this? Because I'm sticking my tail out there. And more ways than one with this. Are you sure about this? And then I'll go back over. And I literally sent this to four of the sources that I dealt with. I said, am I okay? Is this good? And they got back to me with the five thumbs up. And I'm like, you know, okay. And then on top of that, God bless, you know, Philly Voice's Matt Mullins, because I was like, he should be up for sainthood. But I would come up with something and I would call him like, hey, guess what I heard now? And guess what I heard now? And, just a great team, the Philly Voice great team, Evan Macy and Jimmy Kemsky, who's, I think, the best guy on the Eagles beat, backing me up with this whole thing. And again, it was a process that built through time. And then finally you get all the pieces together. And then some very, very serious hammers came down and just said, yeah, basically everything that you've been told is true. And bango, let's run with this bad boy.
All right, we're speaking with Joe Santoliquido, who just wrote the story, just posted on PhillyVoice.com. Sources inside the Eagles paint Carson Wentz as selfish, uncompromising, and playing favorites. Now, Joe, here's the thing. Nowadays, whenever people just see sources with no names attached to it, how confident, how credible do you... I mean, obviously, you want to go with it if you didn't find them to be credible, but when somebody's asking the question, sources, how would you address that?
They were incredibly sources. That's the best way to describe it. The other thing too is, let me ask everybody here, Trey, who knows football more, football on his pinky than we all do combined.
Right.
Let me ask you, who've been around. Let me ask Bob, who's been there. What did you guys see this past season? Did you not see a preponderance of targets to Ertz? Did you not see an offense that was kind of clunky under Wentz that seemed to work very seamlessly under Foles? Did you not see the way this team reacted and the way this team played under Foles as opposed to Wentz? Now, again, in the story it states, Foles is universally loved in that locker room. And he is. I mean, I can't speak for everyone, nor did I speak to everyone in that locker room, but you could just tell, and everybody that I spoke to in and outside the complex said, yes, Foles is universally loved. Wentz is not. Now, that's not also to paint a picture that Wentz is despised or hated. I'm sorry, that Wentz is despised or hated. That is not the case. That is not the case. Mm-hmm. But the case is that Foles is someone universally loved. And Foles is someone, and this was not a story of Foles against Wentz. The Eagles are moving forward with Wentz, but the Eagles have a conundrum. The Eagles have a situation where you have a quarterback in Carson Wentz that can get you to the big game, but we don't know whether or not that quarterback can win the big game. You have a quarterback in Foles who over a 16-game span can't get you to the big game, but has proven he can win the big game. So it's one of the biggest dilemmas this city has ever had. The sports world, the pro sports world has ever had in terms of, quarterbacks, in terms of two complementing pieces. One thing also that I can't stress enough, but it's there in the story for people to read. Wentz and Foles have an amazing, incredible relationship. They love each other. They respect each other. They support each other. That is incredibly, incredibly accurate. You know, that all fits into what these guys told me. But the narrative is very, very simple. Carson Wentz was so hell-bent on getting back this season, so hell-bent on making this his team again, that he risked his own health. Let me ask you guys this. Do you think Carson Wentz was healthy this season?
No. I think that he came back. I think that he was still laboring a little bit with his knee, but you could tell like he was trying to force an issue.
Bob?
No, I don't. I think there was something off with him. It was probably the knee, whatever it was, and that caused to me. That's what caused the offense to labor this year.
Yeah, guys, what would you estimate? Carson Wentz was 75%, 80%, 85% of who Carson Wentz could be.
No, I mean, coming back from the injury, Joe, I'm speaking with Joe Santaliquido of the Philly Voice. I think, personally, he wanted to be out there week one. Eagles held him out to be cautious. I don't think this is a result of him coming back too early or too soon. I think that the offense sputtered because he was trying to do too much by himself. That's why I think the offense sputtered. I mean, there's a reason why they went from 22 points per game to 28 when Nick Foles took over. So, yeah, the offense definitely stepped up once Nick Foles took over. But if that was him killing plays at the line, if that was him focusing on Zach Ertz, I could see why the rest of the offense would be upset about that.
Yeah, and the thing is, he not only risked his own health, and I very strongly believe, I'm not a doctor, obviously, but I very strongly believe him going into this season, not exactly 100%, led to the back injury. He risked his own health. He risked the health of the offense. And in turn, he risked the health of his team. And we all saw again the end result of this.
Joe, let me ask you real quick. The sources that you got, and you said you went to many, many people. Is this a select few of the locker room that feel this way, or would you say it's a majority that have a sour taste of the way Carson Wentz handled this season?
That I can't speak to because I didn't speak to everybody in the locker room. I do know that the offense, with the exception of Ertz and Wentz, at times were not a happy group. That was expressed to me from the number of people that I spoke to and the number of people that I spoke to throughout the NFL. I mean, there was over a total of, in terms of editors, in terms of, I even had my attorney look at this. His voice, well, I'll leave out, but I also know guys throughout the NFL, that I spoke to, in reference to this. And they said, people talk. And right. there's guys that aren't happy campers. And again, I'll even resort to the Sheen Anderson piece during the course of the season. And again, that was just a tidbit that touched the surface of where this story, how this story laid out in my lap. But she touched on it too. There was a lot of people that were not happy. Whereas Wentz came in the last season, he targeted, everybody was involved. Everybody's mobbed. And again, we saw what happened. We saw when Carson Wentz runs this offense the way it's supposed to be run, we saw the results.
Right. So, Joe, what you're saying, it sounds like with everything that's gone on this year, we've come back from the injury and then the back injury and the offense having the struggle, it seems like, though, it's not like he's lost the locker room. It just seems like this attitude, the locker room, the attitude the locker room has right now is this year in particular and isolated. What the hell, Carson?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And there was hope. And again, let's also stress this, of everyone that I spoke to, they want him to succeed. They want him to do well. You know, they, someone says to me, you know, Joe, we said, we want this guy to succeed so badly that it hurts. And I genuinely believe that, you know, again, like I said, I think it's a matter of he pissed a lot of people off, you know, at times this season and sometimes during the whole season. But I think the Carson that he can be and the Carson that that they want him to be, I think that has a possibility. And it's there in the story. That's a possibility of returning.
All right.
And hopefully, I'll tell you what, you know, you write something, and again, the esteemed Mr. Cooney knows, you know, you write for that broad audience, this and that. If one person sees this, and one person reads this, and one person gets something out of this, hopefully it's 11. Hopefully somewhere in a South Jersey home, you know, he's cozying down with his doggies and his guns next to him.
Riggs.
You know, get ready to do his hunt. You know, hopefully maybe 11 may see this and just say, you know what? Maybe I got to take a little bit of a deeper look at myself. And maybe I got to take a, maybe I have to take a step back and reevaluate the way I looked and did some of the things that I did this season. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear the universal thing that came across was pressing, mm-hmm. was his inability to read a defense the way he was his first two seasons. Someone used the word regressed. So there was some things there that I think that I know are, these things are all correct.
Mm-hmm. All right, well,
and
Joe,
long term, this is you know, he's going to be the old quarterback.
Joe, will this have? I mean, the doomsday scenario is that this will have the Foles people saying, "Look, you can't have Carson Wentz around anymore." So, do you think that's what it'll come down to, or do you think this is something that is very well within repair?
Just well within repair. I think mm-hmm. all this stuff is collectible. And again, I can't stress this enough because we human beings have a tendency, let's look at the negative, let's look at the negative. You know, these guys all said, highly intelligent, works incredibly hard, very determined. These are Carson Wentz mantras. These are things that he does well. What he needs to do is really to kind of take a step back and just like, you know, hey, listen, guys, I suffered from tunnel vision last season. Let's get everybody involved. Let's get everybody on the same page. And let me begin trusting this offense the way I trusted it during my MVP-like season. Because you certainly trusted it then, and you see again that same offense Foles ran. Again, you don't have to be a football expert. You don't have to be a brain surgeon to figure it out that, you know, when you trust that offense, and it's a winning offense, a Super Bowl winning offense that outdueled Tom Brady last year, when that's trusted,
stop that, man. Stop it, man. Outduel Tom Brady.
That's a trigger phrase for Trey, outdueling.
He did not outduel Tom Brady.
Well, they scored 41 points and they won the Super Bowl with that offense. Is that okay, Trey?
Yeah, that's cool.
It'll never not be funny to me. Sorry, real quick, Joe, last thing for you. Speaking with Joe Santoliquito of Philly Voice, just put the story out regarding Carson Wentz. Sources inside the Eagles paint Carson Wentz as selfish, uncompromising, and playing favorites. What about the coaches? What about Doug Peterson? If this was the case and that was going on, it seems like these players have been very vocal to their position coaches and their head coach about anything that disrupts the locker room. So what would the coaches do when they'd hear about this?
That I don't know, and that I can't speak to, but I do know this, and we all know this, Doug Peterson's not going to throw his franchise quarterback under the bus in any way. Mm-hmm. Doug Peterson's not going to turn around and just say, you know, hey, Carson's not running the offense that we want it the way we want it run. But I think that comes in the eye test. I think that comes in, again, when that offense is run the way it should be run. We see the results and we see what happens. And hopefully, there's going to be enough sway to get Carson into investing into not only just the offense, but investing in his teammates and trusting his teammates again. You know, whereas Foles trusted those guys, again, the eye test shows that Wentz did not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, this is a lot of this is not really a great. And again, I write it. A lot of this is not a revelation. A lot of it isn't. Some of it is, but a lot of it isn't. And how Doug Peterson, and again, I wrote it. Doug, I thought Doug did a far better job this season. I thought Doug deserved to be coach of the freaking year.
Yeah.
In terms of how he balanced everything. And the fact is that these guys made the playoffs. He did a far better job this year to even get them to the playoffs than he did in winning the Super Bowl last year, because he is developing and he is also balancing so much stuff behind the scenes, you know, politically. Again, you don't want to piss off 11 to a point where, you know what, this is the way I was treated here. This is his contract year coming up. I'm out of here, guys.
Sure. And so it doesn't,
he has to turn around. He has to placate his star as well as try to placate others.
Right. And Joe, it doesn't seem like that's the case. It just seems like this could be a year where Carson was just trying to do way too much on his own and was pressing, as you just said, was pressing to get back into the swing of things and help his team. I mean, I guess the intentions were good.
Yeah, but I also think of that process, Mark. Again, he, and obviously, again, for the eye to see, he alienated a hell of a lot of guys on that team.
So when
he alienated a lot of weapons on that team that he could have used, and he did not. And he also did that because I think there was a little insecurity that may have surfaced with Carson Wentz. And this is just opinion, but I think there was a little bit of insecurity that surfaced. And again, maybe and possibly limited his field vision to, again, see 86, 86, 86, and not really see anybody else.
He targeted
him 106 times. 106 times, 30 more times than he targeted. I think it was 76 or 75 times he targeted Alshon Jeffrey, and I think Nelson Aguilar was targeted 60 times on the blitz. It's a pretty big disparity.
So it sounds like if you're not in Bible study with him, he's not really dealing with you like that.
I can go into that, but I'm going to leave that alone. Someone gave me a great analogy that I'm not going to repeat on the air. I do believe I repeated it to Mark off the air, but I'm going to leave that bad boy alone. I'm just saying, Carson, again, I'll just reserve back to Carson had his favorites, and sometimes that's spelled out on the field. Because let me ask the three of you guys this: do you think Jordan Matthews would be an Eagle without Carson Wentz?
No.
Yeah, probably not.
Bob?
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
All right, Joe, we're up against it, man, but I appreciate you. I know it was short notice, but thank you for coming on with us and at least talking about the story. I'm sure you're going to be talked about a lot, my friend. So
I got a feeling I'm already getting castigated in some circles and
right.
some others. What's out there is out there. What's out there, I think, again, and we all, if you read the story, it's over 2,000 freaking words, but a lot of it is not a great revelation. A lot of it, like, you scratch your head, like, this adds up, doesn't it?
Right. Well, again, you go back to the numbers, and it would. But, Joe Santoliquito, PhillyVoice.com, if you want to check out his article, Jay Santoliquito on Twitter as well. Joe, thanks so much, man.
Okay, thank you, guys.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.